Zach, you can sing. I know you were about to. Literally the wind up.
I was like,
I don't know what it is. Every week, the minute we sit down to record, it's just
forever young. I want to be forever young.
It has to be the Jay-Z version.
Why are you singing forever young?
Forget not when, forget not why. But I'm still here for now. Bye bye.
Bye bye. I don't think that's in the.
I think it is.
No, all I mean right, the bye bye.
I'm gonna. Can I go?
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Hello and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the
forever young,
sometimes hip and perpetually lay editors of American media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news.
Dun, 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 dun.
Often over drinks.
Lent is over.
And
he is risen.
And so are our glasses.
Yep.
I'm Ashley McKinless, joined by Ogle Segura and Zach Davis. So, Zach, what's on tap today?
So today, in honor of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, he turned 90 this weekend.
Yeah. On Easter.
On Easter.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And on Monday, he celebrated with a Bavarian beer. And so we are drinking Franciscaner Weiss beer in honor of him. So we hope wherever you are also able to enjoy a beverage, unless you're listening to us on your commute or something, in which case,
wait
don't.
30 minutes.
Yes.
But to Pope Benedict.
Cheers. Prost.
Prost. Prost. And later in the show, we will be talking to Andy Otto, author of the new book, God Moments. And we will also be bringing you our Consolations and Desolations, where we tell you where we found God this week or didn't find God.
But first, it's time for Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to.
I'm really hoping for eventually some like spiffy like news minute music in this
dun,
segment.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Or just us doing that.
All right. First up, Sunday was Easter, and Pope Francis had his annual Urbi et Orbi, which means city and world. So this is a message meant not only for Catholics, but the entire world. And I really like this year's message. It called out by name a lot of places in the world where there is violence and suffering. He talked about Syria and Ukraine, Yemen, and he used this metaphor or description of Christ as the risen shepherd. So we usually hear about the risen Christ or the risen Lord and the good shepherd, but he talked about the risen shepherd as the one who tirelessly seeks us, his brothers and sisters, wandering in the deserts of the world. With the marks of his passion, the wounds of his merciful love, he draws us to follow him on his way, the way of life. Today, too, he places upon his shoulders so many of our brothers and sisters crushed by evil in all of its varied forms. So I thought that was nice, like picturing God as the risen shepherd today, taking on the burdens of a very burdened world.
Yeah. There's that. It reminds me of that great picture of Francis where he has the lamb draped over him.
Yeah.
It's, and he's smiling, right? And the good shepherd smiles, carrying all of us.
Next up, Wednesday was a mixed bag for Bill O'Reilly. In the morning, he was at the Vatican, and every Wednesday, Pope Francis has his general audience, and Bill O'Reilly, the famed Catholic Fox News anchor, or pundit, I think is more accurate, was in the VIP section. So that's where Pope Francis comes down after his homily and shakes people's hands. So Bill O'Reilly got his picture shaking hands with the Pope. So that must have been a highlight of the day.
People are running headlines right now with Bill O'Reilly met with Pope Francis. He shook his hand.
Yeah.
A ton of people shake Pope Francis's hand. Even I, one time, gave him a high five as he drove by in the Pope-mobile. In case you're wondering, he has very soft hands. My first thought was that, no, it kind of feels like my grandpa's hand.
Nice. And every time this happens, the Vatican has to release a statement reminding secular audiences that Pope Francis doesn't know the hundreds of people who...
Especially when later in the day, Bill O'Reilly is fired from Fox for sexual harassment allegations, which he was.
Yep, he will, not, he will not return.
Yes, he will not return. He was not fired.
Go on vacation and then never come back.
Yeah.
He will get paid out a ton of money, which
I'm sure he will.
I don't know how to feel about that. Is this justice?
Perhaps not.
Yeah.
Certainly not for the women who have been hurt by this.
Certainly not.
Next up, recently unearthed internal documents from the police service of Northern Ireland show a list of words that police shouldn't use when they're addressing different religious and minority groups. So certain words are considered off limits. So we now know the terms for Catholics, as well as like Protestants and old people that the police were encouraged not to use. And as a Irish Catholic, I'm just going to go ahead and say them. So you can't say Chuck, Chucky, Tag, Tim, Mick, Mickey, Patty, Free Stater, and strangely enough, Sponger.
Sponger.
Sponger. Sponger. All right. Are you allowed to say that, Zach?
I don't know. So we asked for some help here. Mm-hmm. Our adult supervisor, Carrie Weber, is married to an Irishman. Her mother is Irish. So she reached out to her mom and she texted back and said, I've heard it a lot as a term for people who mooch off others. No religious connection for me. So perhaps there's an implication that Catholics were a drain on the system. I don't. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, see, what I want to know is why people aren't more creative about how they insult us today. Like, I don't know any Catholic insults that are still used.
And
we must be doing something wrong if we're not pissing anyone off.
No, you still get things like papist or...
Oh, papist. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Jesuit. Or yes.
Right. The name of our show.
Yeah, if you Google Jesuitical, you will still have...
Hopefully us first, but then some insults.
Yeah. So there is a story in the LA Times that was headlined, Conservative Opposition to Pope Francis Spurs Talk of a Schism in the Catholic Church.
That sounds serious.
Indeed. However, the reason we brought this to the table is because this sort of is representative of a failure to understand what it means to be Catholic in secular media often, mm-hmm. because schism means a very serious thing in terms of Catholicism, right?
There's been two.
Well, there have been two great ones, yeah. Right? However, I mean, in the history, there have been many, but it specifically means, you know, separating yourself from the church community. This article is talking about people within the church who have struggled with certain teachings that have been put forward by this papacy. That doesn't necessarily equate with schism, right? Like, mm-hmm. in fact, they're doing the very opposite of schism. They are staying within the church structures and advocating for this or that. Specifically, the big thing is Pope Francis's conversation around the church's ban on divorced and civilly remarried people taking communion.
Right. And this was in, they're specifically referring to his comments in The Joy of Love, correct?
In chapter 8, in a footnote, mostly. Right. And there are plenty of Catholics who don't necessarily love and agree and endorse everything that ever happens at the Vatican, right?
Right.
And so this is a very real issue. And sometimes I hear people ask, like, well, why don't you just leave?
Yeah.
You know, why don't you just leave this organization? And that's not at all how faith works and how, like, a sacramental relationship to a community works, right? You know, you don't just, like, revoke your membership the way you would to, like, the Republican or the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be complicated. And there are many things that you're not going to see eye to eye with a fellow Catholic or just within your own faith. But that doesn't mean you leave. You know, you just engage in dialogue, which is what Pope Francis is doing, you know?
Right. Someone described my college parish as a place where, you know, it's like a family where everyone fights back and forth, but everyone comes home for dinner.
Which is like every single family and every human institution. And we just happen to be living in an age where, like, everyone is being deinstitutionalized. Like, we're not identifying with party. We're not identifying with a specific ideology. So, like, why identify with a specific religious institution when you can pick and choose the parts that you like of all of them?
True.
But, yeah, no, I think we would all agree that there is value in sticking with a group of people that you were born into and you know, love despite their flaws.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jesuit Peter Follen wrote an article for America called Can Catholics Dissent from Pope Francis's Teaching on the Family?
Which will be in our show notes.
which will be in our show notes.
Which are on our website.
And he says that's the wrong question, because he makes the distinction between, so when the Magisterium releases something like The Joy of Love, Amoris Laetitia, it's instruction. But you can do instruction as teaching or instruction as commanding. And he's saying that Amoris Laetitia is instruction as teaching. And Pope Francis specifically says that the greatest benefit will come if each part is read patiently and carefully. So he's encouraging you to dig into it yourself and think about it. He's not hitting you over the head with a rule that he thinks needs to be enforced right now. So
And in fact, that's what he asked for in the synod, right? He asked the synod fathers to have a healthy, thorough, comprehensive dialogue about it.
A discernment. It sounds Ignatian.
More coming.
We'll be talking about that later. Okay, what's our next story, Olga?
So recently, the state of Arkansas made some news. Their supply of the sedative drug that is used in executions was set to expire. So they decided that they were going to execute 7 men in 10 days. U.S. District Christine Baker granted a preliminary injunction that sort of stopped these executions from happening. But you know, the government is still looking to continue with these, whether I believe 5 are scheduled for this Thursday, to use the expiration of this drug as a reason to sort of to kill these men is just unbelievably cruel. You know?
Inhumane. And there's been a bit of a Twitter scuffle going on. Yes.
Right. Sister Helen Prejean has been extremely proactive on Twitter.
Is she subtweeting the governor of Arkansas?
No. She is directly tagging him a bunch of messages. She is one of the leading voices against the death penalty. So she's been very, very vocal online. And we have some of her tweets here.
So on Easter, she said, "My Easter message for Governor Hutchinson would be, Jesus was a convicted criminal executed by the state. That's why I don't understand how Governor Hutchinson can call himself a pro-life Christian while planning to kill 8 people in 11 days.
Woo. Yeah.
Fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji.
Another tweet. Some say I'm quote unquote trolling Arkansas officials. The way I see it, I'm just pointing out their contradictions and exposing their missteps.
Fire.
Nice.
So thank you to Sister Helen Prejean, another prost to her, for doing the dirty work of stopping. She not only trolls people on Twitter, but she stands with inmates who are on death row and actively advocates to save their lives. So, prost to you, Helen Prejean.
Prost. So, our next story comes from Kansas. The Catholic College Benedicting has recently renamed all of its yoga classes to be life fitness classes, citing concerns about the potential for Eastern mysticism.
Do you know a single person who practices yoga that is steeped in Eastern mysticism?
Actually takes up the beliefs of like bodhisattvas or what?
Right.
See, my favorite part about this story was that it puts the president of Benedictine College on the same side as like the very progressive students at colleges like the University of Ottawa, who had the yoga program shut down at their college because they said it was cultural appropriation.
Which is, yeah, it's that's fascinating.
Yeah, but you know, I've been to seders, I've been to bat mitzvahs. My sister just told a really great story about going to an Eid celebration and learning about that religious tradition. So I think you can engage with other traditions and even benefit from other traditions without compromising your Catholic faith. Would you agree with that?
I think Pope Francis's example, right? He's meeting with other people and attending, you know, praying with or alongside other people.
Yeah.
Yoga has always been sort of the syncretic practice that has bridged faith traditions. Mm-hmm. And so in Catholicism has liberally engaged other cultural traditions.
Mm-hmm. Very liberally from the beginning.
Yep. So, you know, there's a tension that we all live in.
Yeah. But we can all agree that people who just think...
I'm sorry. We can all
agree that Lululemon is the worst.
So this week's guest is Andy Otto, author of the new book, God Moments, Unexpected Encounters in the Ordinary. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome to be on this amazing new podcast.
Thanks. Thank you.
Do you say that on all the podcasts?
All of them.
So your book was published April 7th. So can you talk to us a little bit about what A God Moment is and what the book is about?
Yeah. So in my experience with Ignatian spirituality, which really changed my perspective of who God is and how God meets us in the world, I've just discovered that there are many ways that, I'm not even reaching out to God. I'm not even seeking God. God's the one who takes the initiative. God's the one who's often kind of nudging me on the shoulder or appearing in a relationship or a particular experience or life moment. And so that's kind of what the foundation of the book is, because I start with talking about awareness, that how can you have a relationship with God if you aren't aware of the multitude of ways that God becomes present in our everyday.
Yeah, so speaking of God being present, one of the central themes of the book, I think, is the incarnation, and a phrase you use over and over again is God with skin, or giving God skin in different ways. So God, really coming into the world through the incarnation of Jesus Christ. So can you talk a little bit about that phrase, giving skin to God?
Yeah, it started with this Ronald Rollheiser quote from his book, The Holy Longing, where he talks about that we need a God that has flesh, that's accessible. And that's done very much through our own actions and actions of love to one another. So if a friend is listening, I'm visiting my parents right now at home, and they made me breakfast this morning. And I see that is an act of love. And in many ways, they're being instruments of God. It's God who's serving me breakfast and using them. I have a new child, and so it's not just changing her diaper and feeding a bottle. It's God caring for her and showing her love through me. Teresa of Avila said that we're supposed to be Christ's hands and feet. So it's not a metaphor. Like, we're literally extensions of Christ in the world. I tend to feel God's presence most in discernment of big decisions, because you really feel the movement of the spirit and the emotions and feelings. And I recognize God very much in that. I was a Jesuit for 2.5 years, so I made a discernment to enter religious life. And then throughout religious life, I had lots of experiences, learned how to pray, learned all about Ignatian spirituality. And then I felt these desires for marriage. And then, so with my spiritual director, I went through a even harder discernment to leave the society. And I recognize God very much in that.
Have you discovered any different insights or additional insights, in the vocation of marriage with Ignatian spirituality?
Yeah, I'm grateful. My wife is Jesuit educated, and actually, when we were discerning to get married, we actually went through an Ignatian election process, as is in the exercises. We spoke to our spiritual directors. We really did a thorough discernment, and then we did the same thing when we decided to move from Boston to California to accept jobs out there. And now we've actually just accepted jobs working with the Jesuits in Atlanta, so we're moving back across the country. But all these decisions that we've made, we've gone through a real discernment process because we want God involved in our marriage. When we got married, we asked ourselves, like, how is our marriage going to give God skin? How is our marriage going to bring God into the world for others?
You talked about making an Ignatian election. Could you describe what that is and how that might apply, both in your own decision-making and how maybe our listeners' decision-making?
Yeah, there are different ways to do it. Basically, what my wife and I did was we have a decision before us. In our case, there were two job possibilities, two different cities we could move to. And so we prayed with each of those decisions. I used my imagination, and I went to Jesus in my imagination and said, we're going to make this decision. What do you think about that? And then I kind of listen and see what Jesus has to say. And then I go back to Jesus again. Here's the other decision. What do you think about that? And then I kind of, with God, sort of analyze, pay attention to the feelings that I have for the decisions that are before me. That's one way. Another way that Ignatius gives is just making a list. What are the pros and cons of the decision that you have, the different choices? And then I spoke with my spiritual director, who really helped me kind of sift through the data, the feelings, the conversations I had with my wife, the conversations I had with other people. And so actually in my book, I have a whole chapter on discernment, and I have four different sort of elements to that. It's being aware of your feelings. It's bringing all that to prayer. It's kind of experimenting, trying it on, you know, can you imagine yourself there? And then finally, taking into account the community that you're going to be a part of, the community that you're going to find friendships in, that you're going to serve, and even the community that you'd be leaving. So it's hard making decisions. It's not meant to be an easy process, but when you sort of go through the whole Ignatian process with God, there's a sort of a good choice that starts to take shape, and then you just sort of have to take the leap of faith and commit to that decision, whether it's, you know, going to grad, choosing a grad school option or changing careers or moving or what have you.
I just want to play like devil's advocate in terms of Ignatian spirituality. So whenever I encounter different spirituality writers in this vein, I get thrown back to what my therapist and then later like my high school counselor and then my college counselor said, which is like, Ashley, like you have so much going for you. You're smart. Your parents have like given you all these things. Like the only burden in your life is going to be the burden of choice. And it's like a luxury. It's a luxury of choice that I have been given. And a lot of Ignatian spirituality seems like a really great answer to that burden, a good way to think through having more than one good option. So that's great for me. But like, what does it offer people who have less options?
Well, I would say that's like a failure of the imagination to think that people don't have options.
Okay.
Totally. Yeah. To think that we have different options. We have different choices, but I don't think it's too difficult to consider.
There is a reality that it is a privilege, right? Discernment is a privilege because, you know, not everyone can just pick up and move across the country for a new job or have the means necessarily to do that. But even in Ignatian discernment, in the exercises, Ignatius has a place where he says that, you know, if you're in a situation that you can't change, you can still pray for the affirmation or the confirmation to stay in that state of life or that place you are. And so that I think, you know, for those who perhaps don't necessarily have that privilege of choice, they can pray for that confirmation that, you know, either to stay in that same place or to maybe shift the way they approach their work or their situation.
Mm-hmm. Is there any specific advice you would give? Not to like pinpoint our audience, I know it's wide and diverse, but for people in their 20s, is there any specific advice that you would give for those major life choices, whether it's choosing a partner or choosing a city to live in, choosing a job?
Yeah, you know,
read your book is an acceptable answer.
Just read the book. You know, for no decision aside from marriage or something like that is permanent. No job has to be permanent, you know? So I think young adults tend to approach that like they've got to have everything figured out now. It's okay to try something for a while and then move on to something different. The most important thing is what you're doing giving you joy and giving you peace. That's where you want to kind of land up.
No, I never felt pigeonholed with my philosophy degree. That's for sure.
I have to say, you mention in your book that there is actually an app for this, which, like, when I read that sentence, I was like, oh my gosh, my sister Jackie needs this app. So can you talk about Feels?
It's not in the App Store anymore, but
no,
there are similar,
it sounded so great.
There are similar apps. If you just do like decision-making app, where it just, you put in your choices, you put in the criteria, and you put in how you feel about each one of them, and it weights your choices. This is kind of Ignatius is making a list, pros and cons kind of thing. And so we actually did that as part of our discernment to move to California. And it was helpful. It was part of the process. It wasn't the only process. I don't think you should just, that should be, I don't think that should be your only method for making a decision.
My sister may or may not have chosen her husband based on a pro and con list.
May or may not.
All right. So we like to finish our conversations with our guests by asking them if they could canonize anyone right now, living or dead, Catholic or not, animated or live action, who would it be?
Canonization used very loosely.
Yeah. No, just like, you know.
Yes. And I told, I wish I was a part of those Disney conversations you had, because I worked at Disney World for a while, and I got to say, my favorite character is Donald Duck, because he's got a good heart. He always has good intentions, but nothing ever works out for him, and he's got a temper. So when things don't work out for him, he goes crazy. Mm-hmm. But he's got a good heart, and I don't think people realize that. So I would probably say Donald Duck, because, you know, none of the saints were perfect, and neither is Donald Duck. You kind of have to dig deeper to find it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking with us, Andy. Tell us where you can find the book, the podcast, the blog.
Yeah, where people can find
podcast,
you on Twitter.
The blog and the book, godinallthings.com.
Awesome. And are you on Twitter?
Andy Otto.
There we go.
Great. Thanks, Andy, for joining us.
Yeah,
and
it's been fun. Thank you.
Have a good one.
All right, now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God. What do we have up first, Zach?
Well, as many people did, I went home for Easter Sunday, Easter weekend, which was really great. I was in the parish that I grew up in, and part of that was, I don't know, I feel like this is turning into, this section of the show is turning into, we go to church with our significant others.
Yeah, you guys do.
I like it. I mean, after Ashley's reaction, that's the only thing I'm going to talk about.
I left this out in our planning session because I said it would probably make Ashley vomit. And she wanted to have a real authentic vomiting for the show. But so me and my girlfriend went back to the parish that we met in, actually. And we didn't, you know, we sort of didn't talk through college in a couple of years, and so reconnected in Brooklyn and started dating recently. But sort of my Catholic conversion was I had been confirmed in the eighth grade and was ready to give up on Catholicism, and then my friend invited me to a youth group at our parish, and so I went to the teen mass, and I was sitting on the left side of the church, and this girl got up and went to lector, and I was like, wow. And I went home and I told my mom I found the girl I was going to marry.
Oh, no! Lord. Oh, God. Ashley can't.
Tell me it's not Amanda.
It's Amanda. So that's gross. I don't even know if we want to use that. But
no, we have to. That is so precious.
I thought when you said that you left it, I thought, oh, my gosh. I thought the Italian deacon was the thing that would make me vomit.
No.
So then over Easter, you guys went back
to the
parish.
Over Easter, we were back in the parish, and which was really great. Both of our families were sitting in between two pews together, and then, you know, there's this old Italian deacon who's been in the parish forever, Deacon Felix Azzola, and he sees it together, and he just notices that we're together, and he, oh, this is good. And he's like, and you can, you know, get married and have lots of Catholic babies.
All the babies.
Solid Catholic babies. And we were like, whoa, deacon.
Yeah. Have Catholic babies and Ashley will babysit.
That's,
clearly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what, you know, that's obviously a happy feeling, but I think the thing that makes that a consolation is being in a physical space and feeling the peace of God and the joy of being able to like really experience the joy of the resurrection was sort of integral to where I was and who I was with this Easter.
That's beautiful.
So yes, I actually have a desolation this week. As I've mentioned on this show before, I love Unorthodox, the podcast from Tablet Magazine, more than most things in this world. And they were basically the inspiration for Jesuitical. And I got invited to be their Gentile of the Week this week, which was really...
Which is awesome.
Which was really fantastic. Exciting. And I should have been, like, so excited. And I was.
Be like if the Cleveland Cavaliers called me and told me to fill in for the NBA Finals.
Are you calling me a JV podcaster?
Oh, Lord. Nope. Another Zach Sports reference.
Okay. But yeah, so on Tuesday, I was going into their studios to record, and really, like, the week, but especially the last 2 days beforehand, I was extremely nervous and just, like, freaking out. I, both Sunday and Monday night, I had, like, the exact same stress dream of, like, showing up to the studio and bombing it, or, like...
Bombing the studio?
Sorry. Bombing the interview.
I'm sorry.
And it was just, like, really, I have this, like, crippling imposters syndrome where, like, I really don't think I'm an expert in anything, and so I just do not feel confident when I'm trying new things, like being interviewed by Unorthodox. And I was just like, so the way I deal with this lack of confidence is like over preparing for everything. So the night before, I was like Googling constellations and desolations in case they asked me what constellations and desolations mean, and I wanted to have like a very good answer. And so then I was reading about the rules of discernment, and I was reading about the evil spirits, and I was like, oh my god, the evil spirit is like so in my head right now. I'm so anxious
but what's super
and
cool,
frustrated about my anxiousness.
Yeah, but super cool that you like got into spirituality and realizing that.
Yeah, but yeah. So
God is still at work even in your desolation.
Exactly. Which is kind of, that's part of desolations, right? It's a situation where you feel like it's hard to find God, or you're listening to voices that are leading you in the wrong direction, but you don't, that's not the end of the story. You work through that, as I tried to, at least.
I'm sure you did great.
And I didn't bomb the studio or bomb the interview on Tuesday.
That's good to know. Yeah.
And you can hear, well, I don't know if I want to advertise it until I've heard it first.
Ashley will be on the show this
Thursday,
their latest episode, which came out yesterday.
Yeah. So I've also got a desolation this week. So in a past few episodes, I've talked about sort of the places where I found God and all of these beautiful moments where my faith is coming alive in my personal life. But I'm also realizing that I'm at that age in my 20s where relationships that I developed and that really solidified in college, these friendships that I had, are sort of growing apart. And it's making me a little anxious and sad because it's, you know, as Ashley was mentioning, you're not feeling God's presence in those moments. And it's you question yourself because these are people who were with me when I was, you know, becoming an adult, going into my adult formation. So to kind of see them not be in my life as much is just kind of like, well, then who am I if these people who were with me for 10 years are no longer as involved, you know? So that's my desolation.
That's a part of life. Yeah. Right? I think everyone's going to go through eventually if they haven't already gone through it.
Yeah.
The circle narrows.
Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Eloise Blondieu this week because Wyatt is taking a well-deserved vacation.
In Wisconsin.
Our editor is Noah Levinson, Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ, adult supervision provided by Carrie Weber, and our logo is by Sean Tripoli. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your Android phone provides to you in terms of podcasts.
If you think your mother would love this podcast, grab her phone.
Yes.
Subscribe to us for her.
Mm-hmm. I might have done that to my mother this weekend.
Same.
And then...
No, my mother's actually been subscribing all her friends for me, which...
That's
so,
really sweet.
Yeah, thanks, Mom.
Okay, so everyone and your mother, subscribe.
Yes.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show and send us your questions, feedback, and cocktail recipes. Actually, now we will take cocktail recipes.
Lent is over, so now we can drink, and we need to get creative with our drinks, so please send us those recipes.
Yes. And we would take some consolation knowing that you were sharing the same drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We certainly would. Okay, so, and then also, tell us where you found God this week. So, you know, we do the consolations and desolations on the show, and, you know, If you're doing the same thing in your life,
and this is us asking you, we're asking you right now, what was your consolation this week?
Yeah.
What was your desolation this week?
Yeah, really, do tell us. We want to know. So send us all of that at jesuitical@americamedia.org. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next Friday. For America Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Christ is risen.
Alleluia.